All right, welcome back to the Who Is Will Sims podcast. Today my guest is Taylor Gomolisky, and I know him as the man in the flames. You can call him Tay, though. He's a musician in our local scene and plays with a few of the bands out there, and we'll get into his whole story. How you doing, Tay?
I'm doing really good. Who are you?
Yeah, it's with a big question these days. Okay. Who is Will Sims?
That's you?
Yeah, sometimes. Sometimes it's me.
Nothing up here, I don't know.
Yeah, so I first met you playing, you were playing with Tiënesta, and I know I've seen you around over the years. You were also playing with Brothers Clare. Mm-hmm. And then when we did that show at the State Theater, you did it with the Man in the Flames, which, like, everyone in my family loved you guys. Thought you guys were great. I loved when you did was it the hardest button to button?
Yeah.
Love that song. That's nice. We had that record when we were kids, man. That was just like one of those records. Like,
that's one of my staple coming of age records back in my middle school, high school years. Listen to that on repeat. That and KG Elephant's Thank You, Happy Birthday.
Nice.
Those were good. But freaking love Jack White's music.
Yeah.
Kind of staple. His music.
He's been able to be like a real mainstay in the rock scene, which is like what we need. We need more guys like that. Yeah. Keeping rock music in the forefront.
Yeah.
So yeah, basically I kind of like to go like back to the beginning of like the musical journey. For me, I think back to my dad bought me the first Matchbox 20 record when I was a kid, and I listened to that religiously, and like that kind of led to like all the 90s bands and stuff like that. What were some of those records for you that were just like, dude, like music is awesome, and just kind of started that path towards like getting into music?
I never listened to this album fully. I should probably revisit it, maybe. Was the first song I ever learned was You Ain't Nothing But a Hound Dog by Elvis.
Yeah, yeah.
When I was 3 years old, when my dad sat me down on drum sets for the first time.
Okay.
Yeah. So I think that was like probably one of my fondest memories with music, was my first ever. And then
I can't even think back to 3 years old, and you're like, dude, I was playing.
I remember that, and I remember being pushed down a mountain for skiing, and like I remember vomiting in a trash can from altitude sickness. A lot of memories from 3 years old. Nothing between like 3 and 8, I feel.
It sounds like mild child abuse, but you know, like.
It's fine. Just slight lapses in memory from time to time. But.
Right.
But no, it's a good time. 3 years old. How I miss it. But no, I mean, albums wise, definitely Thank You, Happy Birthday is a big influence of mine. They say around that age, around like sophomore year of high school is, you know, the more formative years for most people, and like influences their music throughout the rest of their lives. And that's right when that album came out, and I got a fucking tattoo of it on my arm and all that stuff.
So was that like a pretty quick transition of like you kind of like being really inspired by music and it leading to you like getting into like playing music and learning an instrument? Or
it inspired my writing more than anything else, because at the time I was already in a band with honestly most of the members of Brothers Clare, Cooper and Andre and I and a couple other people were in another band called Animal Orchestra at that time. And I was writing some songs for it. Cooper was writing some songs. Andre was writing some. It was all good. But our main influences back then, before I found that album, was Red Hot Chili Peppers and AC/DC.
Nice.
Good artist.
So when did you start playing music? Was it like something your parents got you into, like doing lessons when you were young?
Oh yeah. I started, you know, drums first, like I said, when I was 3 years old. I wasn't very good at that. I was 3. Get off my back.
I mean, yeah, it's like a lot of coordination and stuff required for drums.
Yeah. But I
definitely can like attest to like parents seeing like, oh, like he tapped his hands, he wants to be a drummer, and then it's like, Yeah. It's not that easy.
Well, my dad was a drummer, and a lot of his family were drummers. My granddad's brother, something like that. He keeps telling me the same story, but I never get it straight, of how he was the drummer for the Jazz Bandits and played alongside Gene Krupa and all that stuff. So I guess it runs in the family. I don't know. Drums.
Yeah, yeah.
It's funny, though, because my main instrument is now piano, and that is what I started next at 5 years old. My parents took me to a piano lesson that my brother was having, and I sat down on the piano while they were having a conference with the teacher, and I just started playing and playing notes. And the teacher's like, "What about him?" And they were like, "Oh, to help him in school and help his memory and all that stuff." Yeah. But guess what? Now it's my job. So
I would say there's like at least a little bit of like that, just the ability to operate both hands independently that you kind of you start with on the drums, and then that kind of translates into piano. Like you got to be able to
for sure. So know, like. I feel like once you play piano and if you get drums down too, because piano is a percussion instrument, fun fact,
yeah,
that everyone knows. But once you get piano down and you have like a sense of rhythm from the drums and a little bit of coordination, I feel like you can play pretty much any instrument, you know. So,
yeah, that's neat. I was kind of like I never really thought about being a musician until like I was much older. Like to me it was just kind of like, you know, I liked singing. I would be down here like cleaning and when I was a kid and have music playing and just be like singing at the top of my lungs thinking no one could hear me. But now that I'm older I'm like, dude, everyone could hear me.
Uh-huh.
But
you're good now though, is the thing.
Well, you know, and then I didn't start playing guitar until my senior year of high school. But then, like, once I picked up the guitar, I was, like, all in. But, like, you know, I tried over the years, like, they were, you know, I tried doing, like, guitar lessons. I ended up mostly teaching myself and then tried, like, piano lessons. But, you know, like, guitar just felt right to me. Yeah. And I can like write stuff on the piano, but I can't just like sit down and play whatever, but that's cool. Like, you know, I feel like there's this weird thing like that I kind of see with a lot of kids that are kind of like, I guess, pushed into music when they're younger. And like, I don't know if you've seen like some of these bands that have come through and like, you know, I don't know, past 5-10 years, but like I think of bands like Bad Seed Rising was like one that was around for a little while, and they were just like all kids, and they had like this pretty hot streak like where they kind of took off and they went on tour and did all this stuff. Yeah. But now they're like not really doing anything, and I don't know if they're like, maybe they're on break, but like I kind of wonder if like it kind of hits you differently when you're kind of pushed into it and then like your parents get behind you and it's like kind of like this. It's almost like they're like your parents living vicariously through you, like
pushing you through. I feel like it's got to be a combination of a few things to create that kind of person that just wants to do it, you know, forever. And it's definitely having your parents push you and other people around you in the circles that you run in when you're a kid, pushing you towards that. But you also got to be, you know, you got to have that. You got to be driven yourself. Obviously, you got to have some sort of talent. But all three of those combined, along with... I was about to say some fourth thing. I can't remember. But let's go with those three for now.
Yeah, that's good.
A little bit of craziness.
Yeah, yeah.
There you go. Got to be a little crazy. That mixture right there kind of makes up that person that's just like, I want to do this forever and I don't know any other way.
Yeah, I mean, like, for me, it feels like it's just become, like, this big, big part of my life. Like, I don't know what I would do if I couldn't play music.
Yeah.
But like, it's also just kind of become this thing where I've really kind of taken control of it. And, like, I feel like this level of understanding that I have with it. Where, like, you know, maybe one day I'll hit like a level of success that I'm really happy with.
Yeah.
But even if I am just at this like level working on music,
what's your,
like, I know that I'll be happy.
What's your like music life end goal?
I mean, I would love to reach a point where like a lot of bands are these days, like to be able to tour in like high end clubs and sell them out. Like that would be amazing.
That'd be really cool.
I've always tried to write songs that I think would fit like really great in a stadium environment. That's kind of like my favorite bands are bands that play in those types of environments, like U2, Oasis, like bands that write songs that are like larger than life.
Yeah.
And you know, I didn't really come from a place of adversity. Like the thing about a lot of the bands I love is they grew up in like, you know, environments that are, you know, way less than ideal, like dealing with things that I never had to deal with. Like, you know, the craziest thing I probably had to deal with in life was like seeing 9/11 on TV. And even then I didn't really even process what was happening. Like I was just some goofy kid that was just like, I didn't even know what was happening until like my parents picked me up. I thought that like my brother was in trouble or something, or my brother got hurt.
Yeah.
And they were like, oh no, like we're under attack. And it was like this crazy moment. But yeah, so I feel like that's one of those things that like I hear about a lot of artists that like when I look into their backstory, it's like a lot of their success comes from that like pain that, you know, they kind of had to deal with and turn that into like this message, this voice. So you spent a lot of years honing your craft, and then I guess you kind of found this like musical style and that like really spoke to you. So how do you feel like that translated into like, I want to make music that's like this, or you know, kind of pushing you in a certain direction musically?
Well, so listening to all those albums and everything like that, it definitely inspired my playing and the way I write. But a lot of times it's just like I have something in my head, or like there's a song that doesn't exist yet, and I could just make that song.
Yeah,
you know, like it's a sound that I want to hear that isn't a real sound yet.
It's just water.
Okay.
Just weird.
The house collapsing.
Creepy haunting sounds.
Oh, good. Your house is haunted too.
That's what I do. I just trigger weird haunted sounds.
I found like we've been living where we live in Fells Point now for almost a year, and about a month ago, we went to the basement and I looked. I saw these two light bulbs in this hole, like closing off this hole, and I was like, "That's a weird way, like place to put light bulbs. Why are those there?" And I took them out, and there was a dead crow behind it.
Oh my god.
And like, so first of all, that must have been there from way before we moved in, and it's in a man-made shaped hole that they blocked off with light bulbs. And I don't want to remove it, because what if I'll get cursed?
I know, right?
You know, like what does a dead crow mean?
You're like, well, it's been here all this time.
Yeah, and the house hasn't fallen down, so.
It's like you take it out, and the next thing you know, like you wake house up, there's fire. Just this big black hole in the ceiling above you, and you're just like,
put the crow back.
I have to get out of here.
Like, put the crow back.
Yeah. Well, this wouldn't be the first like kind of haunted story that's been told to me here. So
good.
So yeah, I guess this.
I have lots of
that. I guess it doesn't help that my brother put that like Nightmare Before Christmas like boogeyman mask there either.
I didn't even notice that.
Which is like kind of just creepily staring at us.
Yeah.
I realized that like halfway through my last interview. I was just like, it's weird that I could just know that he was like, I'm gonna put this here facing them. That way they like. Someone will address it.
Hell yeah.
So yeah, man. So I know you played in Brothers Clare. What else, any other bands you played in before that, or was that kind of like your main band?
So that was me coming back after high school and going through college and all that stuff. Because we had an animal orchestra in high school, and then you know, went off to college, did our own things, whatever. And came back, and I was like, I don't know what I want to do with my life. And I was going through a spiral. I was going crazy. I was
the
like,
ultimate question, you know?
Yes. I'm done with college now. I don't know what to do. I'm going to live out of a van in New Zealand, and I'm going to go surfing in the morning and skiing at night, and that will be forever.
Yeah.
And then I had a friend who just was like, that's stupid. Don't do that. we're going to travel real quick and then come back with a fresh set of eyes. And that's what we did. And then Cooper, the drummer for Brothers Clare, he's one of my, no, actually, I think he is my oldest friend, met him in first grade, was like, hey, I'm in Brothers Clare, and they we have a show in like 2 weeks, and the bassist and the keyboard player just dropped out.
Oof.
And we were like, okay, sounds good. And he's like, you want to play in it? I was like, yeah, sure. You know, I'd been jamming with another guy previous to that, but not really anything tangible. And so I went and I played that show. Actually, that was for Ebba Nova's release, EP release. I don't think they had released their album yet.
Yeah.
At Metro Gallery. And that was the first show I ever played with Brothers Clare. And it was really funny because he brought me in, then he brought Nick in, who is now our other guitarist in Brothers Clare. But he was on the bass, and they taught us all the songs. Then they're like, all right, we're going to fuck off upstairs for a little bit. You sit here, try to figure this shit out. And we're like, all right, sounds good. And me and Nick just kind of looked at each other, and they were like a folk band, for sure, like a folk, kind of folk pop a little bit. And we looked at each other, and we just like kicked on the distortion pedal, and we're like, all right, now let's go.
Yeah, yeah.
And they ran downstairs, and they're like, yes, that's what we're doing.
Yes.
That was it for Brothers Clare and leading up to Brothers Clare.
That's cool. Like the two ways of joining a band, you either join after half the members quit, or like me, I book a show, and I'm like, I need a band. Like, I've already booked this show.
That's what I do with Man in Flames, like, yeah.
Yeah, so that was how my last band, Roll It Over, started. Was like I had a show booked, like, I don't know, 3 or 4 months in advance. And it was at a record theater. And it was, like, opening for, like, Bang Tango and Kip Winger of Winger. Like,
yeah.
Like, it was just this 80s rock lineup. And I was like, well, I want to do this show. And I confirmed with the booking agent. I was like, but I don't have a band. And that's how that band started, which lasted like 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was like one of the first bands I was in that like we had like a real tenure, and we played some really cool big shows. And
yeah.
But yeah, so when do you feel like you kind of reached a point where you're like, Or have you reached a point yet where you feel like you're kind of actualizing what you want to do musically in the scene or in your world of like?
I'm still trying to figure that out, but I mean, it's been a pretty good year for me musically, you know, with Tinesta and the Man of the Flames and a little bit of Brothers Clare too peppered in there. We played Maryland Day Festival.
Yeah. That was a cool day.
Yeah. That was a really fun show, I'll be honest. And it helped that it started raining and we were playing indoors at Lucky's.
Oh, nice.
So everybody came in to see our set and it was just electric.
Yeah, I was running sound on that in Leaning Kugels or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I had a little stop in there, which was, it was pretty cool, but a little bit more like background music because it was a lot of singer-songwriters, so it was just a lot of people hanging out.
Yeah.
Drinking while we played our songs, but
yeah, I mean, it was a good time. I came and saw y'all set.
Oh, yeah. It was the whole thing was just a cool setup, and I'm glad they're doing it again this year.
Yeah, for sure. But, yeah, it was a good year with all that stuff, and I got, so, like, 2023 is this year. 2022, I was basically homeless for most of the year. Picked myself back up with some help from Monica, my girlfriend, thank you very much. Happy to live with you. And now I got a studio that's up and running.
Nice.
Writing songs for, honestly, mainly writing songs for other people right now. I still write for myself, but like,
which is a cool thing to be able to do.
Yeah, like it's great to just, I complain about it sometimes when there's like a client that I have who's being just too much. Or they're just not being a good person. I'm like, oh, my God. And I'll just go off on a tangent. And then I'll be like, I'm still writing music and getting paid to do it. So, like, that feels good.
Do you have a name for your studio?
Yeah, it's Scotch Studios.
Scotch Studios.
Yeah, named after my little puppy.
Scotch, Scotch, Scotch.
Yes.
I love Scotch.
Scotchity, Scotch, Scotch.
Yeah.
I say that all the time.
So, cool. That's awesome. Yeah, that's the real trick is, like, trying to find that musical balance. Like for me, it was like making the decision to become kind of like a solo artist, which just allowed me the freedom of like making the music I wanted to make and including the people that I wanted to include, which was like the biggest fear was I was afraid that I would be like, oh man, like I need someone who can play guitar on this song, like a cool lead or whatever. And I'm going to ask people and they're going to be like, ah, I'm too busy. Like, which totally understandable response. Like a lot of musicians are, a lot of really good musicians are busy, you right. know, but like 9 times out of 10, I'll be like, hey, I got this song. I need someone to play lead. And usually people are like really open to it. They're like, yeah, send me dates. Yeah. Like,
I think that's part of being in the city here in Baltimore. And also just collectively the fact that we have, you know, this city and then just 45 minutes down the road is DC and an hour and a half, 2 hours north is Philly and then New York is 3 hours away. Like everything's like right here, you know? And so I was recently asked about like, what if I moved to LA and like did the music scene there? And I was like, well, LA is nice, but like that's, you know, and they have everything.
Yeah.
You know, music wise, you know, they have every genre.
That's the thing, like,
but like I can just be here as well.
I feel like when you go out there, it's like, A, you got to be willing to like devote yourself like 100% to that lifestyle, which is like hard. Like for me, I got to work. I work full time, have 2 bands that play out, and I'm doing a podcast now. Like, and that's just to like, you know, try to, you know, try to still be like something that's somewhat relevant
yeah.
in today's world. But like out there, it's like, you know, it's almost like
no here, job, here, just be music.
Right. It's, and like here, it's like, I feel like we all support each other. It's like a good scene in the sense that like, you know, people like you, they're going to come out and support you. Out there, I feel like it's shark eat shark. Like,
yeah,
you know,
no,
like,
I mean, on the East Coast,
you
it's,
know, it's just a different vibe.
It's a different vibe on the East Coast. It's a good place to be a solo artist or a session artist.
And also like you could be really good and go out there and like get exploited really easily. I feel like too, like that's what everyone's looking is like, oh, you're good. Like, yeah, you know, just sign this piece of paper and you'll be set. And it's like, you know, like a lot of people don't realize what they're signing away out there half the time, or maybe they're,
yeah,
they're open to that.
And all that stuff. I mean, I learned my lesson when I tried to move to Nashville. I plane landed and that's why I was homeless. Actually, it was plane landed, went 10 minutes down the road for a meeting with a guy that, you know, he needed a tour manager and a pianist. And I was like, yeah, I can do both of those. He never found me a piano to play.
Right.
He ended up paying me a few $1,000 less than what he told me. And it was just enough money to pay off my new car that I had just bought in anticipation for this. Pay off the month, not the whole thing, I should even mention. And then to get a flight home. So I don't know about LA. Like,
yeah, and from what I hear, it's not much better on like even higher levels. Like I've heard of... you know, guys in the production industry that go out to do tours and stuff, like lighting for tours and stuff, and they'll be like, yeah, you know, I did a couple dates, money wasn't adding up, I said see ya, you know.
Yeah.
Took the first flight back home, and it's like...
Yeah. If it ain't right and you got a place that you can go, you know, it's fine.
It's like, yeah, it's I think it's just one of those industries where, like, I think, you know, there's you get people that are, like, out there and really giving it their all, but then there's also like people that are out there that are like looking to like, you know, make money wherever they can or cut money wherever they can, and like, you know, if you're not careful, you're the one that's getting, you know, shortchanged in the end.
Yeah.
But yeah, like that's the real trick of this industry. But I guess the cool thing these days, which I've come to appreciate, is like, you know, now more artists have access to, like, you know, marketing stuff, like Facebook marketing, stuff like that, where you can push yourself out to whatever audience you want, which is kind of like a neat place to be. You know, you don't have to, like, it's not like, oh man, I got to get a music video on MTV anymore, which is like, I feel like the big thing back in the day. It's like you can put your stuff up on YouTube and you never know, like it could take off at any point, which is...
Got to find the right hashtags or something, I don't know.
You know, start a TikTok channel, you never know. Like, just make the right video or release the right song, anything could happen. So, you know, it's just definitely an interesting world to be in, you know. So, yeah, we did that show at the State Theater, which was really cool. Family, a lot of people in the family loved you guys. I feel like everyone there was really digging your set.
Speaking of family and, like, promotion and all that stuff, I want to go back a ways. When we were talking about, you know, growing up and all that stuff, once you started playing shows and singing and stuff, did you get people being like, oh, play us a song in your family, or like, go play the guitar for us, like during Christmas or something?
Not in families, more like friend groups and stuff. I'd be like, the guy we were supposed to be like, play, bring the guitar. And then, you know, it's like you sitting around a campfire playing Wonderwall or whatever songs. Like,
we got a lot of
back play. Then I was limited by how much I could remember, but now it's like, you know, I go out and play gigs all the time. I got like an iPad that's just loaded up with songs, so I can like,
it was every family gathering was just a recital for me and everyone else who was like, who could play some sort of music. Like, Taylor, play a song. It's Christmas. Play a Christmas song. Like, I don't know a Christmas.
That would drive me nuts. I think like the closest that I ever got to that was like, if I would go over to my grandmother's house, the fact that I could sit down and play anything on piano, she was just like really happy by that. Like I could sit down and play like The Scientist by Coldplay, or like 3 AM by Matchbox 20, like real like basic versions of those songs, and sing along to them. And she was just like so excited by that, because you know, she played piano in church and stuff like that, and that was like a big, you know, big thing that she did. And
I think it's really funny though that back then I was like, I'm not gonna, you know, I don't want to play music for you guys, you know, whatever.
It's resentful.
And now in my adult life, I'm like, well, do you want to come to my show? Like,
yeah. I can imagine that, like, well, we, you know, who paid for all the piano lessons? And then it's like, how that turns around. Please take a ticket. Please come to the show. Like, you know, I'd say like I definitely went through that. I definitely had the phase where like people were excited about coming to see my band play. Like, oh, that's cool. Like, you got a band. And then like now I just wish that those same people cared. Like, because like where I was then was like I go back and watch videos and I was like, oh, like, you know, we were not quite there yet. And now I'm like, no, I finally got it together. Like you need to come see me now that I've figured it out. Like,
yeah, for
sure. And they're just like, oh, you know, I got the kids and, you know, I got to work and this and that. Like, I don't want to pay for parking, like stuff like that. It's like every excuse under the sun.
I think it's really important for bands nowadays, just, or bands, artists, whatever. You just got to keep it fresh. You know, you can't have the same set of songs. You can't play the same set every single time. People are going to get bored. Nobody's going to come to your show because you're just doing the same thing over and over again. Because of that, venues aren't going to book you. You know, write new stuff, do new things.
That's the trick, and it's like the thing I see a lot of bands struggle with. And I know it because I lived it. And it was like, you know, the last band I was in, we were a band for 4 or 5 years. We went through a few different lineup changes, but our last lineup was like 4 pretty consistent guys, and it took us, you know, 6 months to put an EP out, and then another year and a half to like finish the album, and then another year of getting the album remixed and stuff like that. And then it's like we finally put it out, and then the band breaks up, and I've seen so many bands go through that. It's just like, it's just that eternal struggle of, you know, most bands that do it well, like they put the music out and then they're like out there doing stuff. It's like, that's the real trick, is like you almost don't even want to be out there playing unless you've got something to offer people.
Yeah.
And you know, I went through years of playing shows of like without anything to offer anybody. And now it's like, that was a big thing when I went the solo route, is I was like, dude, I'm getting in and I'm like, I'm recording as much as I can and putting it out as quickly as possible, because I don't want to be in that spot that I was in before where like you're just working towards having something. It's like, I want to have stuff out and then be out there like, I'm here promoting this. Well, now I'm here promoting this, and like always have something new to offer, like you said. And that's, and I know it's tough for bands because getting 4 or 5 people on the same page sometimes is like the hardest thing.
Mm-hmm. And like, you also got to be responsive to the audience and like to what people are saying, you know, even if, you know, they may not be musicians, some people may not be musicians, and they could just be saying their opinion, but I mean, they're partially, you know, you're doing it for yourself, but you're also doing it for them.
Right.
You know, so like,
it's another
if they
thing,
come
like,
up to you and like I'm working on releasing some songs that like every Man of the Flame show that I've had at least 2 people come up to me about this one song called Make It, that they're like, when are you going to release that song? Like, have you recorded it yet? And
yeah.
Like, I did over COVID before I knew how to do anything, and I put it on Bandcamp, but like, I you know, I wanted to revisit it, and so I did, and so I'm going to release it, because people keep fucking asking, all
yeah.
right? So if people are telling you to do that...
Knowing when the signs are pointing to you, like, this is working, you know?
Yeah. Yep.
I've been kind of getting to that place recently, and I think a lot of it has to do with the record I just put out. Like, I've been getting a lot of, like, compliments on my... Like, even if I'm doing, like, a 3-hour gig where I'm mixing up my covers and originals, like, I'll still get people to say, like, covers are great, but your songs are really good, too. And it's like,
Yeah. It's
good to feel like I'm hitting that point. And, like, I'm starting to get to the point where I have a catalog of songs to choose from, so I'm not, like, so dependent on... Like, I have to play these songs because these are the only songs I know.
Yeah.
And, like, being able to say, well, that's not working. Let me try this, or, you know, which is a really cool spot to be in. Like, it's been a lot of time and a lot of money to get there, but I've definitely been in that situation in bands where, like, someone will come and be like, that's my favorite song. And, like, everyone in the band's like, that's, like, our least favorite song. And it's like, yeah, but if people like
favorite.
It, like,
yeah.
Like we need to take that into serious consideration.
It's like, their favorite and we made it.
Yeah.
So we must like it since we made it, you know? And I know sometimes that doesn't work that right, but there's another song of mine that like we've only played once, and it was at the State Theater, and we didn't even play it correctly.
Yeah, but most people don't know that.
Yeah, most people don't know it. And even after our set at the State Theater, we did have people come up to us, and they're like, what was that one song that you played? That was really good. And then we didn't play it at the next show because the band was like, well...
We messed it up last time.
Yeah,
we
know...
We need to practice it.
And fair enough, and I'm trying to like get a practice together with them. That's, you know, that's a whole other thing about, like... I love being a solo artist in this city. I'm in other bands too, but I love also being a solo artist because I can just pull from, like you said, I could just pull from whoever.
Right.
You know, everybody's trying to be their own musician, you know? And so if I need somebody for a set, I give them enough heads up, they'll be ready, you know? But I got to flesh that song out.
The thing I always tell people, like when they come in and they're learning my stuff is like, I was like, obviously like I want the song to retain its like the energy and like feeling of its like recording, but like I don't mind if like you put like your own personality to it, like, you know, if you like, not every drum fill has to be the same, not every guitar lead has to be the same,
yeah,
as long as it kind of captures that energy.
Yeah.
It's like what I really like don't want you to get hung up on is like if you make a mistake or whatever, like it was like anytime you make a mistake, like mistakes are going to happen whether you want them to or not. Like I mess up playing, I played my songs 100 times, I usually make a mistake somewhere here and there. It's like, but I was telling him, I was like, you gotta take that and like use it as fuel moving forward. And I always think of this, it's like this story of Trent Reznor when he first started Nine Inch Nails. You know, the first album he made was like he did it all in the studio himself, like it was all industrial stuff. But then when he decided I'm gonna make this a live band, there were elements getting added in that weren't necessarily in the recordings, but he would go to like the guitar player and be like, all right, like he's like in the song Terrible Lie, it's literally just these two notes. It's dan, dan. He's like, but it's not E D, it's fuck you. And it's like, he's like, that's the energy that I want when you're playing that. You're not hitting these two notes. you're fucking saying something with your your playing. And it's like, that's what I kind of tell people. I was like, if you fuck up, fucking act like you did it on purpose or whatever. Like, take that energy and keep moving forward.
Yeah.
You know, because I, like, and I've been in that place too where, like, I make one mistake and then it gets in my head and then I make another mistake because of that. It's, like, hard to translate. It's hard to, like, get out of that headspace sometimes depending on certain gigs. But, you know, if there's one thing I've learned, it, like, it doesn't matter how many times I've done a song. Like, I could still mess it up.
Oh, yeah.
Like, there's songs I do in Phantasm where it's like the first and the last verse are literally the same thing, and I nail it the first time, but for some reason on the second time I mess it up, and I'm just like, what the heck, man?
Yeah.
You know, so.
Now, I mean, that's something that my piano teacher had to drill into my brain, was like, play through the mistakes. When I was growing up, he hated that so much. Smacking my hands.
Yeah.
Like, don't start over. Just keep going. And you're like, okay.
So you got the studio, you got the Man in the Flames, and you're still playing with Tiesto and Brothers Clear, I assume, from time to time.
Yeah.
Any other stuff you got coming up that you want to tell the people about?
Not really. I mean, it's mainly just the studio work right now that I'm trying to focus on, especially since it's, I mean, we're both in the same industry doing events and stuff.
Yeah.
It's January. 'Tis the season to not be working.
Right.
So I have to fill that with something. So just trying to record a lot, record other people, do stuff like this, you know? It's all I got going. Got a release that's going to be coming out sometime early spring with a couple songs on it. And that's about it.
Yeah, man, I definitely want to collab on something at some point. I know we've talked about doing some kind of band or like maybe just collabing on a song, but it's definitely in my head. Like, I, you know, I just sometimes it's just about finding that right song that'll to bring someone in on. So yeah, man, thanks for coming out, and I'll, you know, play one of the songs on the podcast for you. See, whatever one you want. So thanks a lot, man.
No worries, thanks for having me.
And now a song from Taylor's band, The Man in the Flames. This is called So Bad at Lying.
Ripping through the seams, I can feel you staring at me. You're so bad at lying. In an armed robbing, you have stolen all that I breathe with a cut in your eye. Give it back. Instead, you try to act like you never had an attraction. I have tied it to my neck with you. Lapse in judgment almost pushed you through. Make a more careless lie. Every time you speak, I can hear you slurring my name. You should be ashamed. Your words drown in my brain. What you say doesn't match your body. It gives you away. Deep in Solomon's mines, lay some diamonds inside. Stones in your chest are faded. I have had to my neck with you. With you. Lapse in judgment almost pushed you through. Satan could make a more careless lie. On your hands, so please tell me how you feel, or kill me too. I have had it to my neck with you. Make a more careless life.